Everyone, I'm Rachel here with Ari, and we're your hosts for the Merry Writer podcast. This week, we're on episode 206, and we're joined by a guest as we ask, what is the traditional publishing industry really like? Before we dive into the topic, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening if you haven't already. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with friends and feel free to write a review.
Now, please help us welcome Wendy Simpson to the show. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me. This is so exciting.
Oh, that's brilliant. Is this your first podcast or is this, are you like a pro at it?
I think it's my second. I think I did one before a while ago. But yeah, you might as well say this one is my first because I haven't done this in a while, so.
Brilliant. Before we go further, would you like to tell everyone why you wanted to discuss the traditional publishing industry?
Okay. Well, I believe it's important for anyone starting out in the business, whether it is traditional, indie, or self-publishing. There's misinformation out there that needs to be addressed. Also, there are some do's and don'ts that are very important. Like, for example, don't be disrespectful to readers, reviewers, or agents. I've seen a lot of that lately where reviewers will give a book a bad review and then the person will go in and get on their case. And it's like, there are just some things that you don't do. It gets around. And a writer's reputation is one of the most important things in our career.
I think that is really important to talk about. And there is a lot of misinformation. I mean, both Ari and I were self-published, so we don't know much about the traditional publishing industry. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation because some of that misinformation, we've probably spread ourselves without realizing it in the podcast.
Uh-huh.
So with that said, I'm going to dive right in and ask you, what are the main benefits of going traditionally published?
Okay. Well, there is an opportunity for higher advances and more marketing, although it's not a guarantee. So you got to like really look at that. And publishers do tend to pay more attention to their bestsellers. I mean, you got your Stephen Kings, your Nora Roberts, all them. They're going to pretty much get a lot more attention. There's also a better chance at media attention. They'll not do all of the marketing, but you get a bigger or better percentage of it. And of course, there are like the awards you can get nominated for. Now with indie, that's how I'm published. You may receive an advance, although the amount will be smaller. However, the percentages you get as an author are bigger, so you may receive more royalties. So you have to take that into consideration that you may get more from the big publishers, but it's kind of harder to get to them.
So it sounds like there's just a whole other side of the business when it comes to traditional publishing.
Yes.
Because especially like, again, as someone who's self-published, you do pretty much everything yourself. You can hire an editor, hire a book cover artist, yeah. But for the most part, you're in it for yourself. If you're traditionally published, you have a team backing you up, more or less.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And am I right in thinking that you almost can't get into most traditional, like, you know, publishing companies without an agent? So there's that extra... You've got to first convince an agent to take you on before you can get through the door of a publishing house. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. There are a couple of smaller ones that will let you go without an agent, but now pretty much everybody wants you to have an agent.
That could be a whole episode on its own, couldn't it? Yeah. How to get an agent.
I think it's a good thing, because if you don't mind me saying.
Yeah.
Because my agent, she's wonderful, absolutely adore. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with self-publishing and not having an agent, just want to make that clear. But if you're going traditional or even indie, an agent is invaluable. They are your advocate. They basically will make sure that you're not taken advantage of. They'll get you the best amount of royalties, the best deals. They handle all of the foreign rights. My agent does that, things like that. They have a team that handles media rights. So really, it's if you're going to go traditional, even if you go indie, I would highly recommend getting an agent.
Well, the agent knows what's up. They know way, way more than any of us do about the industry, about business, about the legal side of it. Yeah, and I think it's very important to find an agent that you click with. And it sounds like you do click with your agent, which is great.
I do. I absolutely adore my agent. She has been so great for me when I first got her. She, I had first sent her a different book. It was a Weird West fantasy. And she, the agent will go through that and edit it with you and give you suggestions. And, you know, she helped me see what needed to be edited and updated in the book itself. That one didn't end up making it. She did shop it around, but then she asked me, and here's another good thing with the agent. They don't just say, okay, I didn't sell this one book. That's it. You know, we're out. She asked me, okay, do you have anything else? And I said, yeah, I have a couple of finished manuscripts here. And that's when I gave her my debut novel, Tinderbox. And we went through the whole shebang with that, getting it edited and reviewed. And she sent that out. And that got me my publisher, Flame Tree Press. So wow. I'm very glad to have her.
That is brilliant, because it's one of those things, you know, they say, oh yeah, get your novel finished, and then obviously if you want to go traditional, get yourself an agent, and then you move on. You never really think, well, if you have a few extra manuscripts, you know, stacked up somewhere, that if anything ever happened, you've already got that extra one to bring out. And as you said, that's what happened with your debut novel. It wasn't the first one you did, but it was another one that you happened to have written. This is a good point, Rachel. We need to get these novels finished. All of the novels.
No more pressure.
But actually, I am going to self-publish that one eventually. The one that didn't
Oh, great. That's good. Something you said about that really sort of resonated was when you mentioned like the rights and the foreign rights and the media rights. I think that's something that a lot of people don't always think about, especially if you're self-published. You know, people, it's all about getting an ebook out, maybe getting a paper copy or a hard copy. They don't think, well, what about audio? Or, well, some people do, obviously. Or how about getting it translated into, you know, other countries, which kind of gives you a wider range. And yet that is quite a big part that can really give you more exposure. So, and I have to admit, I would not want to try and take on any of that sort of thing as just me on my own. Obviously, I would try and get some legal support, but having an agent who would deal with that, that's something I never really thought of.
Yeah, I actually didn't think of it either at first, but I was at a signing one day and this lovely young woman came up, and her family, and her husband was flipping through my book, and I was like, oh, do you think you're interested in it? And he said, well, my wife likes reading fantasy, but it's, she can't read this because it's in English. And I said, oh, well, what's the language? And she said, Arabic. And I was like, wow, you know, I never even thought that anyone else would like want to read it, and like I'd need translation. I also, of course, I also had a bunch of other people come up and say, do you have it in Spanish? And it had never really occurred to me. So I went to my publisher, I went to my agent first, and I said, look, I've had a few people ask about translations. And that's when she told me, okay, this, I can't remember the lady's name, and I do apologize, but we do have someone who handles those foreign rights. Now, it depends on how many books you sell. So, and that's the same with traditional, whether or not they're going to go ahead and do the foreign rights, or whether or not they're going to have translations or put it in, make, try to get it into a movie, something like that. So it's not something that's going to happen automatically. You still have to see how much you sell first.
That's good to know, because again, I would not have known that. It's, I mean, I always remember when people would be saying like, oh, I want to write a book and then I want it to become a movie, as if authors have any control over that, other than saying, no, I don't want to. And even then it's like, you could end up getting dropped by your publisher. That's like, we have nothing control over that. But yeah, the idea that there would be a sale point, which is understandable because obviously they're not going to want to do a lot of work translating into several different languages only for you to sell and like two books.
Yeah, exactly. So, that is absolutely right.
Oh, but I love the idea that people came up to you like specifically and said, I'd love this in such and such a language. That is a brilliant way to kind of find out what your fans are. Oh, wow.
I felt so bad. I was like, oh, I wish I could like do this for you. And all I could say was, oh, you know, I said, oh, that's so nice. Thank you very much. I'm so glad you're interested. But all I can do is ask my publisher and see what they say. And, you know, she was like, all right, that's fine. Maybe I'll see it in my language someday. And yes, I'm hoping, fingers crossed.
I do agree. I think it's great that you have like that sales threshold in order to do it. But at the same time, it's kind of backwards because those two people that were looking for it in Arabic and looking for it in Spanish, well, it's two more sales you could have had.
That I could have had. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, it's funny. I get it. I understand it, but it is kind of funny. It's a little bit backwards, but it's understandable. And I'm going to backtrack real, real quick. When you mentioned that your agent couldn't sell your original manuscript and asked if you had anything else, that's actually really refreshing to know that she signed you on because of you and your writing and not because of your book. Because I feel like that's something that's a misconception that, you know, when you pitch to an agent, when you pitch to a publisher, it's just for this one book. And it's actually really nice to know that there are agents out there, I mean, probably all of them, that they're looking at you as a writer and not just, they're not just looking at your book.
Oh yeah. They want more stuff. They're not going to do the whole one hit wonder thing unless you as the writer, that's how you want it. They're going to want to know, hey, do you have anything else? Is this going to be a series? A trilogy? What are you planning on doing with this? Are you planning on spinning it off? They're going to want to know all of that. Even with my current books, my agent was asking me if I plan a series, which I do. So that went well. And then I told her about some other projects I'm working on. I said, I'm working on this middle grade novel. I'm working on this science fantasy. And yeah, she just loved that. She was really glad to hear that I had all these other irons in the fire. So don't just focus on one. I mean, you can if that's what you want to do, but make sure you have other ideas, other things outlined that you can present to them in case that one book, because you may be able to do something else with it. Like I said, I'm trying to self-publish mine, but make sure you have different ideas out there for the publisher or the agent to look at. Much better that way.
Ideas are not the issue. I have too many of them.
so do I. I've got notebooks jotted down, you know, wake up in the middle of the night, make sure you have that notebook next to you for that really weird dream that you had, because you're not going to remember it the next day. So you'll be able to write that down.
Truer words have never been spoken.
Seriously. It took me a while to get away from the, I'll just make some really vague notes and it'll trigger a memory to, nope, it's going to be full sentences. Yes. Otherwise, it's just gone.
It's just going to be, you're going to look at it and think, what the heck was I thinking?
I appreciate we've been asking you extra questions, which we should have said we sometimes do that. And I'm going to throw another one.
It's fine.
We're completely missing the other questions. We will get to those. But something you just said about how you told your agent that you have like, you know, a science story and a middle grade. Mm-hmm. One of the things I always thought, and again, I might be wrong, was the agents are very specific on what they'll accept. So did you find that your agent was okay to take lots of different things? And was that something you knew about the agent? Or is it like, if you say you write a sci-fi and then a Western and then a romance, would it be that you might have to go to different agents for those? Or do most agents kind of do an umbrella of them?
Well, I can't speak for most agents. My agent at the time I got her, she was looking for specific works. And the works I had just happened to kind of fit it. Like she wanted the science fantasy. I told her about it. She was interested. Her I can't recall. Somebody she spoke with was looking for middle grade. And I said, oh, I'm working on a middle grade right now. And she's like, good, get it done. Get it up here. Of course, now I'm working on getting the third book in my series done. So I had to put that aside for a little bit. And the best thing, let me say this. The best thing to do is go to the agent's website or wherever you need to go, find out what they want. Because to answer your question, no, agents don't accept everything. Some accept specific types of works. My agent just happened to want the types of works that I had available. But also sometimes she'll throw out an idea and I'll think, hey, that's intriguing. I'm going to put that on the back burner and see if I can't do something like that. So it kind of contradicts with the whole don't write to the market thing. But still, on the other hand, if your agent tells you, hey, this is what I'm looking for. Okay. If you have an idea that's similar or it sounds intriguing to you, then yes, go ahead and write that book. But try not to write just to please. You've got to write for yourself first and then write for others. I'm sorry, did I make any?
Yeah, no, that was great. That was exactly what I needed.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, we're going to segue back to the actual questions we have planned and say, how much control do authors actually have with their books when traditionally published?
Ew. Well, not too much, put it that way. What I ended up noting was that, first off, you're going to be expected to make rewrites. I have every time, so I can't speak for anybody else, but you can't think I've written my book perfectly on the first try and it'll be published as is. No, that publisher is going to definitely want edits. They're going to definitely want you to change things. You've got to be able, unless it's something that you absolutely positively cannot live with. And so far, I haven't been presented with anything I can't live with when it comes to rewrites and changes with my books. Also with the cover, it kind of depends. Now, my publisher asked me for my thoughts on what my cover should look like. Personally, I get nervous about covers. I'm afraid I'll make a suggestion that won't be good or viable. So I just leave it to them. And I'm very glad they do it because it always looks perfect. Now with the biggies, from what I've learned, they'll allow a say, but they're probably not going to do exactly what you want. They're going to use their own artists and they're going to have a final say in the matter. So really the only thing, I mean, the actual making of the book and maybe some of the marketing, that's not going to be something that you'll have much control over.
Yeah. I mean, I always remember people would, especially when people started self-publishing and there was this big push against traditional publishing and indie mm-hmm. publishing, like, no, I want full control. Mm-hmm. And there is something that seems quite cool about that.
Mm-hmm.
Although I always think it's like, as you say, almost every publisher will want some form of rewrites or heavy mm-hmm. editing. Yeah. And then I look back at all the books that I love that mm-hmm. are traditionally published and think mm-hmm. that's probably not exactly how the author originally wanted it. And yet so good. So obviously some of those changes mm-hmm. have definitely been beneficial. I mean, there was an author who apparently the story they put towards their agent, I think there was a bit of pushback saying like, well, what if the character wasn't this, they were that?
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that that's how it ended up, and it's like, wow, I don't think I'd have enjoyed it as much if it was like this. And obviously that's what the author originally had planned. So I think sometimes we have this kind of like, oh, I'm giving up my control, and mm-hmm. yet these are people who've been in the industry for a long time. They know what they're doing. It's the same with the artists and the cover,
mm-hmm.
Because there are trends, aren't there? There's certain trends with book covers. You'll mm-hmm. see it at the moment. I think we're still mostly with the top, the typography, where it's just mostly the words mm-hmm. with a bit of decoration around. And unless you're constantly keeping up with what's going on in the industry, it kind of makes sense letting the publishers have more say, because they are in it completely, so they know, right, this is what's trending, this is what catches the eye, you know, this. And you can see that if you do a kind of a sweeping look over the last few years, you can see there was the time when it was one single image, maybe a crown or a sword on a whitish or pale background with some text, and now it's like mostly text with like a very, you know, maybe leaves in the background, nothing, you know, no single picture, rather than just a and it's like, yeah, that's kind of what you get. You get these trends, and it's takes a bit away from the author having to think about, right, what is trendy, what works, as well as what works for your book. So I don't know. I used to be very like, no, give me control. And as I've got older, I'm like, I could do with letting go of some of my control and letting somebody else who knows better.
You have to. Absolutely. You have to. I mean, you may not want to, but it's necessary. I mean, the people who have been in the business, like you said, for so long, they know what they're doing. That's why, you know, when my agent makes a suggestion, I'm like, oh, great with me. I tell her, you're like Marty McFly said, you're the doc. I say, you're the agent. So you know more about this. I have to tell this story. One instance that happened recently, I had written the outline for the fourth book in my series, and I called it, let me think, Of Shadow and Steel. That's what I called it. And I sent it up to my agent, and she was like, oh yeah, the outline is good, but the title doesn't really gel with the rest of them, because my first book is Tinderbox, my second book is Taromancer. And she said, besides, that sounds too much like, what is the name of that author? Leah Bardugo? Shadow and Bone.
Yes, yeah.
And it didn't even occur to me. Like, and when she said it, I was like, oh yeah. Okay, well, I guess I'm going to have to change it now.
I think that's part of it though, too, because there are just so many books out there that it's so easy that we think we have this unique idea. And then it turns out that it's like, oh, somebody else thought of it first. And yeah, you wrote it differently, but it's still just too similar. Mm-hmm. And I agree with what Ari said earlier about, you know, maybe it's good for authors to let go of some of that control, because it takes off a huge mental load for you, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's also why many self-published authors are a bit afraid to search for an agent and get traditionally published, because you're not quite ready to let go of your characters and you wrote it a specific way. And I think it's a bit of fear of the unknown, because depending on who you work with, depending on your agent, depending on what publishing company publishes your book, you don't know how much control you're going to let go of, and you don't know how many changes they're going to make. So you just figure, well, I'm just not going to deal with it then, and I'm just going to self-publish. And there are many reasons, like many pros and cons to getting self-published, pros and cons to getting traditionally published. I'm not saying one way is better than the other, because it's all in whatever you think is best for you. Mm-hmm. But I do think a big con for a lot of people of traditionally publishing is that control or lack thereof.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
So when you do get an agent and they sell your book to a publisher, how long does it typically take for the publisher to accept your book to the release date? Like, what's that? Mm-hmm. What's a typical time frame?
Ooh, I want to say a couple of months, but that just isn't, it's years. It could be between 6 months to a year. That's how long it took for me. But sometimes 2 to 3 years for the biggies. And I know that sounds like a lot, but I mean, look at what they have to do. What's going on in making a book, the rewriting, the printing, the promoting, and everything else that goes on. And plus, I don't think that's much of a problem now. It was maybe like a couple of years ago, with the shortages that were going on and how people couldn't, you know, how the publishers were having trouble getting the supplies they need. I hope it's not a big problem still now. But yeah, so because of all that, it's going to take about that amount of time. And you just really have to be patient. But there's a way to you know, occupy yourself. Write the next book. That's what I did.
That's a good point, because I was just going to ask how much, like, during that time, I mean, I knew it was a couple of years, but for some reason, 2 to 3 years, I didn't expect that answer. But during that time, how much work do you put into it? Like, because obviously you mentioned about rewrites and, you know, sometimes they ask you your opinion about the book cover and things like that. So during that time, absolutely. Yeah. Write the next book, keep yourself occupied. Yeah. But how busy are you when the publisher is doing their thing?
Let me see if I'm understanding the question. Like, they've already accepted it and they're doing the work and all that stuff, getting the book ready to go out. I am fairly busy, because even if you know for certain, first off, that you're okay, they accept your book, you've signed the contract, everything's cool. You don't want to just sit on your laurels. You want to get out there and let everybody know, hey, I got this book accepted. This is the publisher. You know, I'll tell you a little bit about it. In other words, get on social media. I know a lot of people don't like social media, but you got to be on it nowadays to get yourself a readership. I'm all over the place myself. And of course, you'll want to have a website. I know a couple of authors who they say, I don't want to get a website. And I'm like, you got to get one. Definitely. First off, publishers look for a web presence. And if you're like nowhere to be found, that's going to kind of send up a red flag for them. So at least have a blog, at least be on, and I still call it Twitter. I am not going to call it X. Be on Twitter or Facebook. I'm on TikTok. But also, if there are other things that you do that will get you out there and get you a possible readership, like I stream video games on Twitch, and I talk about my work while I'm on there. I have pictures of my books there. Basically, what you're doing is you're not only writing the next book, but you're getting yourself online and getting that web presence and getting potential readers.
I can be brutally honest. I totally forgot about marketing. How many times have we talked about you got to market your book? And here we are, we're talking about traditional publishing. And I'm like, yeah, they'll do it. No biggie. But I think, yeah, wow. So while they're just doing their thing in the background, you're just hyping it up, and you're like in front of the mob with like the good mob, not the bad mob. I can't think of the right word. You're just in front of the line, like leading the parade. That's what I'm looking for. Parade, not mob. Jeez.
That's okay. We understand.
Actually, just touching on marketing. Because I know that one of the big things that writers often come is like, oh, I want to be traditionally published because I don't want to market. And we're like, you're gonna need to market. Yeah. Unless you are, you know, James Patterson or Robert Stephen King.
Yeah.
Or, where they're like, they will do anything
Roberts
for those.
Or somebody like that.
Yeah, it's like they're not gonna give as much of the budget to you. Mm-hmm. But I was just wondering, is there some sort of coordination? Like, obviously you're gonna have a release date, you might have when it if it becomes an audiobook or anything. Do you have to separate your own marketing and just do that? Or do you work with maybe the publisher and the agent and say, right, this is all the stuff we're going to do, and then they do some and you do some, and it kind of, otherwise, could you end up not copying each other, but, you know, doing the same thing over and over? I don't know if I'm getting this question out right, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, I know you are. Like, say if I want to ask Locust Magazine to do a review, but my publisher has planned to do the same thing. The best way to avoid that is communication. I am always contacting my agent and my publisher and asking them questions. And I can't speak for the biggies on this. My publisher is very good at responding to questions, and so is my agent. the biggies, it may be a little harder. It's with them, it's always best to go through your agent, ask them the questions first, and then see what they can find out. Then you can go ahead and do whatever it is, because they're not, like you said, they're not going to do everything. There are going to be some things, especially if you're a debut author and you're not one of the big famous authors, that they're going to expect you to do. Like, for example, one of the things I just did, besides podcasts, I actually managed to get a radio interview on my local radio station, which was really fun. You can actually find that on my website if you want to go and listen to it. It's what is it under? I think it's under events. But just go to my website and look around. You'll find it. But yeah. And what else did I? I'm trying to get in touch with the local PBS station here and see if they're willing to interview me. I haven't heard anything yet, but fingers crossed, maybe they'll get back to me soon. Because, you know, little places like that, they like to hear what's going on with the locals in their community. So that's why I'm hoping I hear from them. I'm trying to get in contact with this other radio station. And communities have their little local newspapers. And I also have been trying to get with them too. And you also, when you're getting your book out there, don't just go to the bookstores, but there are other places that you can go that will carry, that may be able to carry your books. Like, for example, my books are in the store at the Delaware Art Museum. So you've got to, when it comes to marketing, you've got to think outside of the box. Don't just do the regular things. So I've got my books in this one museum. I went to another museum, but the books they had weren't fiction. They were all for engineering and such. But anywhere where there is a small store where you can see books, ask to see if they'll carry it. Now, most won't. Like, I tried to get my book into Walgreens. That's a pharmacy here, but sometimes they'll say, okay, you've got to call corporate. You call corporate. Corporate says, okay, you've got to talk to the store. Well, the store just said to call you, and it's kind of a back and forth. So not all places are going to work, but that doesn't mean you don't try. Just market wherever you can. Think if it sounds totally off the wall and out there, I say go ahead and do it.
I think that's... Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't forget that. Yeah. But I think that's excellent advice, because a lot of people, when they market their books, they just, I mean, this day and age, everybody's just online and people just think mm-hmm. of digital marketing. Nobody thinks about radio stations anymore or anything like that. So I think that's great that you took the initiative and you got that interview and you've been calling around, because I have a Walgreens here. I wouldn't think mm-hmm. to call them and say, hey, will you carry my book? I've thought about asking my local bookstore and my local library, but other places like that mm-hmm. never even crossed my mind. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of people forget that. And the ones that don't forget it, I think it's a confidence issue, because it is very difficult for us to talk about our books. Yeah. But if you're going to be a published author, you just got to deal with it and mm-hmm. talk about yourself, talk about your work.
I think especially locally, like you said, because if you can let people locally know about you via, like, as you said, radio interviews or a shop that's in your area that can have your book. I mean, I've seen little shops where it's been like, you know, local authors, and then they've had like a couple of books that are very specific. I would love that. I would love to know that the books I'm reading are from the locals, because that's more likely that if they did a signing, it would be here and I wouldn't have to trek 2 hours, you know, to some faraway place or cross the Irish Sea and go back over to Great mm-hmm. Britain to actually visit a book signing, because at least they think, oh wow, if they're local, they might be more likely to do an event here, not somewhere miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Which I always find, everyone who seems to do book signings, they never come to Ireland. They never seem to come here at all. No, at least they don't come to the north of Ireland. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think it is hard, especially if you're an introvert, it can be hard to reach out. But it's like Rachel said, in the end, you've got to kind of take responsibility for your own writing career as much as you can, and kind of doing that, kind of pushing against that comfort zone and being like, well, what's the worst they can say? No. And all you do is go, okay, I'll make a note. They won't do it. Move to the next one. So yeah, that's a really good, it's just like you said, we go to the supermarket, and as you're walking out of the supermarket, there is about three bookshelves, and they always have books on. Now, obviously, with it being a big supermarket, it might be that they only take the best sellers, but it would never have even dawned on me that that is somewhere that sells books, even though I pass it every time, and that I could have at least asked, you never know. But as you said, yeah, it's just, I always think bookshops, not, you know, museums or, you know, somewhere where they sell other things, and then there's a small area for books. So see, all this stuff we're learning that we wouldn't have known without you being on the podcast, we are picking up a lot today.
Good.
Okay, with that, what are some other things authors might not know about being traditionally published?
Okay, well, this is actually for all types of publishing. You shouldn't get into this business for money, first off. And there are some authors out there who make tons of money, but it's not as common as most people may think. And the first time out, whether you're going with an agent or directly to the publisher, although, like we said before, the biggies only accept agent submissions now. I think there are only like one or two people who will let you go directly. You, and I've gotten in trouble for saying this, you will be rejected. Pure and simple. Last time I told that to somebody, it was a bunch of years ago. I was at work at a department store. There were a bunch of us standing around. One of the women had a daughter who wanted to be a writer. And I was like, oh, good. Okay. So I started telling her about the publishing industry. But then when I said, now she'll be rejected at least once. And have you ever had five angry mothers get on your case? I mean, Wendy, how can you say that? It's true. I mean, you're going to upset her, and she's only, I can't tell her that. And it's like, then she's going to be even more disappointed when it happens. Being rejected does not mean you can't write. This business, and I'm sure you two have heard this, this business is subjective. Some people will like something, some people won't. But more than likely, when you start going out, you're going to be rejected. Use that to go back in, do whatever little rewrites and changes that you need to do, and then just get back out there. Don't let that discourage you. I figure if you really love writing, you keep at it no matter what.
That's great. I think I did Quarry a while long time ago when I was writing children's books, and I still have my rejection letters. I kept them because I was like, hey, I did a thing. It's a big deal for me to actually send them my work. So when they sent the rejection letter, even if it's like a formatted, automated thing, be like, hey, I did it. But it's true. Yeah, it is subjective. You're not going to get it right on the first try, or you're not going to send it to the right person on the first try.
Exactly. Yeah, I've only kept one rejection letter, and that was way back in the day. I wrote this young adult. It's like gone. The publishers, it was a little small publisher. They're defunct now, so no point in trying to find the book, but I actually sent copies to various like movie companies, like I said, thinking outside of the box. And I sent a copy of the book to DreamWorks. And I don't know if this was just a type of letter that they send out, but they sent the letter back and it was just so encouraging. It said, you know, hi, we got your book. However, we don't accept outside ideas, but we like the idea and that you sent it to us, but we're just not the right people to do it. And they just went on saying, keep going, get out there. Somebody else will get it. Send it out. You know, don't give up. Don't be discouraged. And I still have that in my office here, because I was like, Oh my goodness, the company owned by Steven Spielberg gave me encouragement.
That's awesome. That's so
I
sweet.
know. I love
Oh.
that. Of course, it didn't work that way for the other companies I sent them to. I got some really nasty letters back. So,
Ooh. There's
yeah,
no
but.
need, is there? There's no need. They can either just not respond or just, as I said,
Yes.
like a canned
Or just.
letter. Thank you. However, we don't accept. That's it.
Exactly.
It's
But
fine
that one from them,
then.
this is a keeper. Matter of fact, I should take it out and like frame it and put it on my wall or
You
something.
should. Yeah, that's.
I never thought of that. I'm gonna do that. Definitely.
I have to admit, when I was like 12, I wrote to Penguin Books and Orion. And I think with Penguin, it was because they did like a set of sci-fi, but I didn't know that was the only sci-fi they did. So it's like, I'm writing a sci-fi. And they're so sweet. They're like, oh, that is really good. And especially because you're so young, we unfortunately don't do sci-fi except for this one set that was very specific. And they're like, but there are plenty of others that will, and you can. And it was very, like you said,
Oh.
like, very encouraging. Obviously, being like 12, it always makes them go, oh. And
Yeah.
I have to admit, I did keep that as like, yeah, because that Penguin Books came back to me. But,
Yeah, that was nice
oh.
of them. Definitely. I had an agent do that when I was 14. Said that I remember they said, this ambition is rare and one so young. And be proud of yourself that you accomplished this. But I'm not gonna accept your book, but still be proud of, which I was. Oh, I wish I had kept that one too.
It kind of shows it's like when you said to that little girl, like, you're gonna get rejected. I remember when I've wanted to be a writer all my life. When I was younger, I was always interested in doing it, and I would learn as much as I could. I used to read the Writers and Artists Handbook because obviously every year it came out and gave different details, and you'd hear things, and it was always told like rejection is big, and you'd always get like such a such a author was rejected 25 times, and this person was rejected, 4 or 5 times. And these are like big names. And you're thinking, yeah, that never quashed my hope in writing ever. Being told you might get rejected, this person got rejected, it was just kind of almost like a badge of honor. It's like, well, if they got rejected and I get rejected, look at what a great club I'm in. But it's yeah, that kind of unfortunate attitude you get with some parents, and hopefully I'm not going to get flamed for that, where it's like you can't ever say anything negative. And it's like, as you said, when it eventually happens, and it will, because it does, in let's be honest, in every walk of life, you can go for an interview, you could do brilliantly, you could not get the job, and it could literally just be because somebody is just a touch better than you or lives closer, and they'll get there on time, anything like that. You can get rejected trying to buy a house, you can get rejected trying to buy a car. Life is full of rejections, and the idea of being like, oh, you can't say that little Kimmy is going to get rejected, it's like, oh, it's going to really hurt when they go through life expecting no rejections. So
Oh
ouch.
yeah. I agree. Absolutely. I mean, it's sometimes it's like a 1-2 punch, but you, like I said, you don't let it discourage you. Just keep going. That's why I'm still out here. And I've been doing this since I was 14. That's when I first started sending out. I actually started writing when I was 5, but 14 is when I first started sending out these ooh, terrible little mystery novels. That's why I write fantasy now.
Do you still have copies of these little
Oh
mystery novels?
no. Oh no, that was a long time ago. Don't ask me how long, but yes, that was a while ago.
We've all been there, though. Well, we really do appreciate you being on the show. So before we go, would you like to share something about yourself with our listeners?
Sure. Now I wrote some stuff down. I see that you say it was a brief bio, but it's kind of not brief. Is that okay? Okay. So, like I said, I've been writing since the age of 5. This is when a family friend, she saw me writing stories on scratch paper, and she gave me this little beat up old typewriter. Yes, I'm old, and to work on. And I officially started my journey to publication, like I said, when I was 14. Can I talk about my books? Is that okay? My debut novel, Tinderbox, and its sequel, Terramancer, are available both in-store and online. Tinderbox made the top 100 on the Amazon's bestseller list in Black and African American fantasy fiction. And it's the 2022 gold winner for Fantasy Forward Review's Indie Awards. And when I'm not writing, I'm reading, working in my garden, or like I said, I'm gaming and streaming on Twitch under the handle. And if you go on Twitch or game, it's Runic Nightshade. And I like to think I'm the original Delaware native, and I share my home with my older brother. I call him Big Brother all the time online. You'll probably see it. And I mentioned I have my two cats, Cinnamon and Spice, and Spice did not come to the door, which is really weird. But yep, that is a little bit about me.
Cinnamon and Spice. That's adorable. I love it so much.
They're rescues.
Well, thank you again for joining us on the podcast. It really has been a pleasure to talk about this with you. And all of Wendy's links will be in the description below, so please definitely go check out her work. But in the meantime, we will turn it over to you guys. Are you traditionally published or thinking about going that route? Let us know your answers in the comments so we can chat about it. And remember, we release a new episode every Wednesday. Next week, we're discussing the differences between cliches and tropes. So to ensure you don't miss it, hit the subscribe button on your way out. As always, thank you guys for listening to the Merry Writer Podcast. We'll see you next week. This podcast is brought to you by Scraps of Paper. We have notes everywhere. The music titled Inspired is by Kevin MacLeod, licensed under Creative Commons 4.0.